This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Survivor 48 is here. And after every episode, dig deep into the show with On Fire, the official Survivor podcast. Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast with me, Jeff Probst, every Wednesday after the show, wherever you get your podcasts.
It's hard to pick a favorite of the opens, but that certainly is one of them. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to start here this afternoon in a way that we might have to call an audible, just because President Trump is going to announce these tariffs. But more interesting than that, I'm wondering if there will be a Q&A. There have been a couple of different things that have happened today. We have some updated information in the leaked signal chat situation. J.D. Vance was on television for a little while this morning. You had some more hearings on Capitol Hill. So there's a lot going on. And I did not spend a lot of time on the signal chat yesterday. I think the circumstances have changed just a little bit. We have Carolyn Leavitt weighing in, but I haven't heard as much from the president today. Ethan is in the studio with me. We have one more day where things are a little quiet around here because Fred will be back tomorrow from Japan. At least we think he will. And I think Sue's coming back tomorrow as well.
Mm-hmm. Yep, we'll have them both back tomorrow. And of course, as soon as they get back, I am not here tomorrow, but then we will be all reunited
at the fish fry.
Eating fish together.
Ethan somehow finagled a ticket to the game tomorrow. You also have helped. Well, truth be told, before you came over here to work for my show, you did quite a bit on the other side. You worked with the Cardinals radio network. And
yeah,
you
not
have
a ticket.
There.
A season credential.
Oh, is that what you have for tomorrow? Oh, you get the fancy credentials. So do you go in the locker room and everything? You used to last year, right?
Yeah, I'll be in there tomorrow because I've been the booth assistant the last 2 years. So I've worked up there with John and Klaibs and Ricky in the booth. I'll be training the new guy, which is another guy on the other side of the hall, Kyle Sixta. I'll be training him tomorrow into that new role, but I'll still be bouncing around the ballpark. Like I said, I still have a full season credential, so you know, you'll still see me in the clubhouse on the occasion and as well as in the press box.
Will you do me a favor? Remind me, you know how I don't really want to do this live on the air, but I'm doing it live on the air. You know how we have that newsroom system down on the other side that we transfer stuff from?
Mm-hmm.
I have a great soundbite from Kevin Wheeler that I want to transfer in and ask you about here this afternoon.
Okay.
Right? It was one of my favorites. I'll try to track it down. We'll talk about it a little later. We got stuff going on here, and I think we've let Charles Lipson know that we might need to call the audible. He's coming up here. He's going to react to all this stuff that's happening with the signal chat controversy. On the topic of the Cardinals, Ricky Horton's going to join us. I hope this doesn't blow up. I want to hear from Trump, and you know we're going to follow this as closely as possible, but I really want to talk to Ricky here. He is one of my favorite people to talk baseball with, and I think, Ethan, you would agree. You've got a great relationship with Ricky Horton. He kind of mentored you a little bit, didn't he?
Ricky is a very dear friend of mine. I look up to him very much so, not only for his sports broadcasting abilities, but also very involved with the Fellowship of Christian Athletes, which is something that I've been involved with for a long time. So consider him a great friend, and he's got some great baseball takes and has been around the game for a long time.
It's awesome. So he'll in theory, join us later. We have Kilmeade coming up in the 5 o'clock hour for his first visit after his appearance at the factory. Dwayne Patterson from HotAir.com, the host of the Dwayne's World podcast. I'm very, very interested in what Dwayne wants to say about the signal chat situation in particular. Before I get going on, boy, I got a lot of good stuff here because we have the signal chat. We have the NPR hearing today. Mike Gonzalez was a guest a couple of days ago. He testified this morning. I have to start, though, with Jasmine Crockett, okay, because this is, she's an idiot. And she has become...
Sum it up real quick.
Right, but she's become the premier idiot on the Democrat side. You have to remember that there were a couple other idiots that filled that role. One here from St. Louis, Cory Bush. I've often called, and I think some listeners thought I was joking. I wasn't completely joking. She was the gift that keeps on giving. Now, I recognize that getting rid of Cory for the St. Louis region, even though I don't think Wesley Bell is much of an improvement, is probably better for the region. But she really was a gift to Republicans in the same way that Jasmine Crockett is becoming that gift right now. But I'm going to tell you that I'm the outlier on this. So she says this about the Texas governor.
Because we in these hot ass Texas streets, honey. Y'all know we got Governor Hot Wheels down there. Come on now. And ass, honey.
So she kind of walks this back just a little bit. She goes, I wasn't thinking about the governor's condition. Governor Abbott is in a wheelchair. He has been for, you know, most of his life. So she comes out and she says, I wasn't thinking about the governor's condition. I was thinking about the planes, trains, and automobiles he used to transfer migrants into communities led by black mayors, deliberately stoking tension and fear among the most vulnerable, blah, 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 right? But here's the deal. There are members of Congress right now who are trying to censure Jasmine Crockett for saying this. That is utterly ridiculous. You're not going to censure someone for saying something like that. First of all, I think Greg Abbott is big enough, an adult enough guy, even though he's in a wheelchair, to understand that there was a little humor there. I don't see why this is some big scandal. And this is where I have an issue with Republicans, because you know what they're acting like right now? Let me think about it. I can't think of the word. Oh, yeah. Democrats! If you're calling for a censure of an idiot, clearly an idiot member of Congress, because she said Governor Hot Wheels about Greg Abbott, that's utterly ridiculous. Stop it. Stop doing that, Republicans. There's a couple of them out there. And I tweeted some of this out earlier because Doug Collins has said, look, I'm going to be honest. I don't think I've ever seen a time where making fun of someone in a wheelchair was ever funny. I don't know was that what she was doing there? I don't know. Just lighten up, people. It's ridiculous. I checked with Jennings this morning on this because I had not heard what he had to say. And he agreed with me that a censure was not in order.
Tried to walk it back and obviously forgot about her previous commentary using that exact same insult. I don't know how the Democrats came to appoint Jasmine Crockett as the unquestioned leader of your party, but thank God. And I think what she should do is go on TV twice as much as she is right now, maybe three times as much.
There you
because
go.
Every time she appears and makes one of these mistakes, says something radical, it only further divides her party from the rest of the other 80% of America who can't stand this. But the problem is there's an audience for it. I heard Jimmy Kimmel's audience cheering on Tesla vandalism. I hear the Daily Show audience cheering on attacks on Elon Musk. I hear the human rights audience cheering on an attack on a man in a wheelchair. And I realize this is what the left has become, an angry mob of people who are cheering on attacks on a guy in a wheelchair and vandalism against people who bought a Tesla is pathetic.
Well, and for the most part, I agree with Jennings. On the whole attacks in a wheelchair, I'm sorry. I'm going to have to sort of go in another direction. I just don't think that it rises to that level at this point. And everyone wants to make a big deal. There's a lot of things that I could point to with Jasmine Crockett where she's a fraud. She's a phony. What she's doing is a complete act. And we know that. She grew up here in St. Louis. She went to Country Day and, you know, went to a privileged school. So she goes down there and all of a sudden in Texas, she's a congresswoman from Houston. She was a failed one-term member of the legislature in Texas. She ran for Congress, somehow got in there, opens her big flap, but she wants the attention. And unfortunately, you know, I understand what Scott's saying because it's sort of the same thing that I said about Cori Bush, where she's the gift that keeps on giving. On the other hand, she loves this attention. There's this woman here in Missouri, and some of you who are out there who are in the inside politics world, if you're listening, you probably know who she is. I don't know who she is, but I see people out there, even members of our roundtable panel. Her name is Jess Piper. She's another, you know, losing candidate. But she says things intentionally to get the attention of the Republicans, and then they give her the attention. And I'm always saying, hey, don't give her the attention because that's exactly what she wants. And I think that's what Jasmine Crockett is desiring right now. And unfortunately, she's getting it.
You know what it reminds me a little bit of, and it's not entirely the same situation, but you remember during the election ramp up when Trump had the comedian from Kill Tony, Tony Hinchcliffe on for a rally.
The night of the Madison Square Garden
rally.
And
he made the comment about Puerto Ricans, right?
Yes.
And the only difference here is that he's a comedian. Like, that's his job, is to make those kinds of jokes. She's a politician, but the point
well, the
being,
left
like,
went
but,
crazy
but the
about
point
that.
Being, why say it to even give the other side some like fuel to the fire to try and even make up those
well,
sort
that,
of comments
that was,
about
that
it.
Was the error of that night. He just, you know, it
sure.
wasn't
well, like
the
I said,
timing of it was way off. But with her, she's going to say things that are stupid all the time that she's been doing. I've been highlighting some of this,
why
and I've been giving
it?
Her
why say it?
Why say it?
Her? Why should she? It's
because
stupid for her to say it.
Dude, I'm explaining this. She wants the attention. She craves the attention. And guess what? She's getting the damn attention. So that's the issue that I have with it. But let me get to the NPR hearing, because I'm likely to feature some of this in Audio Cut of the Day as well. I mentioned Mike Gonzalez was on the show a couple of days ago, and we kind of broke that story that he was going to testify. He's from Heritage. But some of this stuff is really, really good. And, you know, Catherine Marr, who runs NPR right now, and a couple other people were just filleted by members of Congress like Brandon Gill this morning. Some examples.
Ms. Kerger, you're aware there's a political spectrum. Goes all the way from the far right to the far left.
This is not Marr. This is one of the other NPR reps.
And everywhere in between. Would it trouble you to hear that for 6 months, there was an analysis done on PBS's NewsHour from June to November of 2023, where they found that far right was, that term was used 162 times, and far left was only used 6 times. Do you find that troubling?
I don't know the study that you're referring to, and I'd be very interested in seeing it and understanding how they came up with those numbers.
Media Research Center did a 6-month analysis, and it's not how do you find it. You either say far right, or you, it's terms. Yeah. They use the term far right 162 times, far left 6 times. That's a 96-4% skew.
Yeah, it's not like they made it up. They just literally tracked the newscast and they listened to how often you referred to something as far right and far left, and it wasn't even close. So an example of bias, that's not even close. I mean, it's not marginal, right?
Well, I noted Mr. Jordan today suggested that you are fundraising off this hearing today, and a question that I have then, if you receive less than 5%, and over today you've said that private funding helps support the mission and the work of NPR, could NPR survive without the 5% that we give NPR annually?
My belief is that the funding is essential to the public radio system, and that is the 246 member stations with the 1,300 stations across the nation.
All right, so let's address that real quick, because we have in Odyssey hundreds of stations across the country. There's another company, iHeart. There's a radio company called Cumulus. There aren't a lot of local owners anymore. And then there's the subsidized, you know, media. And that's what NPR is. So she's making the case that this is so vital for people across the country to have left-wing bias in their life.
That we're able, as a network, to serve all Americans with 100% coverage. If federal funding for our network goes away, it means that people in rural parts of America, places where they can't afford to make private donations to support their local journalism, those will be harmed. But, sir, if I may, the bigger harm as well, or the additional harm, is that Americans in places that are affluent or do have many media choices will not be able to hear from their fellow Americans that are often underheard.
What?
Bottom line, if the 5% went away, would NPR still exist?
Well, it would be incredibly damaging to the federal, to the national public radio system.
So she's making the case that if we don't have NPR and I guess PBS, but she specifically, that was Catherine Marr talking about NPR, that voices will be, really? Voices will be silent? They don't have conservative voices on there at all. You think people in rural America, is that the bread and butter for NPR? Are you freaking kidding me? Of course it's not.
Do you believe the that National Public Radio takes a balanced and fair approach to news, politics, culture, et cetera?
Okay, this is rhetorical, but here we go.
Mr. Fallon, thank you for the question. I came into National Public Radio with...
I apologize. It's just that we have such limited time. Do you believe that to be true?
I believe that we have work to do. We always do in order to improve and serve all Americans.
More accurate than not that you're fair or you're either fair or you're unfair. So what do you think you are?
Yeah.
I believe we wake up every day with a desire to be fair. And it is part of why...
You're not claiming that you're fair. You have a desire to be fair. Okay. So you would not describe NPR as objective and nonpartisan?
I would.
You would. Okay.
Okay. Well, good luck with that. Now it gets better. Those were average clips. Those were okay. But it does get better.
Meyer, what about Lee Greenwood's God Bless the USA as propaganda?
I'm sorry, sir. Could you repeat the question?
What about Lee Greenwood's God Bless the USA is propaganda?
I don't believe that is propaganda, sir.
Okay. Well, in January, North County Public Radio, and that's a subsidiary of NPR, had Daphne Brooks, who apparently is a black feminism scholar, on its show where it was hosted by the host Brittany Luz. And it says, have you ever watched something on TV and thought, okay, now this is propaganda? Have you ever had that moment? To which Daphne Brooks replied, whenever I see Lee Greenwood singing Proud to Be an American.
So again, she's making the distinction here that that wasn't NPR saying that. That's a guest at a local station, of course.
I believe that represents the individual we interviewed on air and not the position.
And yet you say there's no bias on NPR.
That is not a
biased statement, ma'am. That is not even both parties wrap themselves around this song every time there's a national conflict. Lee Greenwood sings it, and he does a beautiful job, but you say there is no bias in NPR.
That is that individual's opinion, and she, of course, is entitled to it, but that is not the position of NPR.
The problem is, it is the position of NPR. And you can't really fault them for someone that's a guest on another show, but the problem is they do hate America. There's no actual attempt to be fair. I mentioned Brandon Gill. Here's where he went after Marr.
Do you believe that America is addicted to white supremacy?
I believe that I tweeted that, and as I've said earlier, I believe much of my thinking has evolved over the last half decade.
It is. Let me correct that. Her thinking hasn't evolved in the last half decade. Her thinking has evolved in the last 4 months when she knows that millions of dollars are going to be yanked from her organization. So all of a sudden, her thinking has changed.
Evolved. Why did you tweet that?
I don't recall the exact context, sir, so I wouldn't be able to say.
Okay. Do you believe that America believes in black plunder and white democracy?
Here we go.
I don't believe that, sir.
You tweeted that in reference to a book you were reading at the time, apparently, The Case for Reparations.
I don't think I've ever read that book, sir.
You tweeted about it. You said you took a day off to fully read The Case for Reparations. You put that on Twitter in January of 2020.
Yeah, magically, they don't remember a lot of these things, which is weird.
Apologies, I don't recall convenient. That I did.
I'm, okay.
No, I'd no doubt that your tweet there is correct, but I don't recall that.
Okay. Do you believe that white people inherently feel superior to other races?
I do not.
You don't? You tweeted something to that effect. You said, I grew up feeling superior. Ha, how white of me. Why did you tweet that?
She has white guilt, that's why.
I was probably reflecting on what it was to grow up in an environment where I had lots of advantages.
It sounds like you're saying that white people feel superior.
I don't believe that anybody feels that way, sir. I was just reflecting on my own experiences.
Do you think that white people should pay reparations?
I have never said that, sir.
Yes.
Well, you kind of did.
You said it in January of 2020. You tweeted, yes, the North, yes, all of us, yes, America, yes, our original collective sin and unpaid debt. Yes, reparations. Yes, on this day.
I don't believe that was a reference to fiscal reparations.
Oh,
sir.
What kind of reparations was it a reference to?
I think it was just a reference to the idea that we all owe much to the people who came before us.
Oh, my God. She should really be in politics. Maybe she was. I don't know her complete background. One more here.
That's a bizarre way to frame what you tweeted. Okay, how much reparations have you personally paid?
Sir, I don't believe that I've ever paid reparations.
Okay, just for everybody else.
I'm not asking anyone.
Seems to be what you're suggesting. Do you believe that looting is morally wrong?
I believe that looting is illegal, and I refer to it as counterproductive. I think it should be prosecuted.
Do you believe it's morally wrong, though?
Of course.
Of course. Then why did you refer to it as counterproductive? It's a very different way to describe it.
It is both morally wrong and counterproductive, as well as being
illegal. You tweeted, it's hard to be mad about protests in reference to the BLM protests, not prioritizing the private property of a system of oppression. You didn't condemn the looting. You said that it was counterproductive.
Yeah.
NPR also promoted a book called In Defense of Looting. Do you think that that's an appropriate use of taxpayer dollars?
I'm unfamiliar with that book, sir, and I don't believe that was at my time
at
NPR.
You tweeted that you read that book.
I don't believe that I did read that.
Things did not go well for Catherine Marr and the team, and let me just leave you with this. They're going to defund the living crap out of NPR, and it's about time. Brett is back from Japan tomorrow. We'll have Sue Thomas back as well. Then Ethan out tomorrow, but we'll all be together at our fish fry at Queen of All Saints on Friday afternoon in South County on Christopher Drive. So that's our fourth stop. We're looking forward to that. We're going to talk about this Signal controversy. President Trump is also supposed to do some stuff on tariffs, so we may have to dip into that in a little bit. We have Ricky Horton coming up here for a Cardinals preview. But Charles Lipson is back with us, professor emeritus at the University of Chicago. He writes at The Spectator magazine, Real Clear Politics, and others. You can find his columns for free at charleslipson.com. And, of course, he's written a great book called Free Speech 101, A Guide for Students, which you can find on Amazon. Charles, welcome back. How are you this afternoon?
I'm good, and I feel good hearing you mention the Cardinals, because even though I grew up in Mississippi, I live in Chicago now, but I grew up in Mississippi, we listened to the Cardinals. It was our team.
That's what's great about the reach of KMOX is, you know, I always often use Billy Bob Thornton as an example because he grew up in Arkansas. Same thing, listened to the Cardinals games, became a huge fan. So the reach of that radio station was really something. Let's talk about the signal thing. Now here, as I left the station last night, I listened to Mike Walls on with Laura Ingram. Laura pressed him pretty good on some stuff here. One of the questions I think that is still confusing is how did Jeffrey Goldberg, this guy from the Atlantic, end up in this signal chat room with all these other guys that were supposed to be there? Well, wait, let me play the bite here, Charles.
I built the group to my job is to make sure everything's coordinated.
But how did the execute number, I don't mean to be pedantic here, but how did the number
have
get
you ever had
chat?
Have you ever had somebody's contact that shows their name and then you have somebody else's number there?
Oh, I never make those mistakes.
Right? You got somebody else's number on someone else's contact. So, of course, I didn't see this loser in the group. It looked like someone else. Now, whether he did it deliberately or it happened in some other technical mean is something we're trying to figure out.
Okay, so Charles, I'm not super technically advanced. You know, I'm pretty competent, though. If I have, there's a guy here at the radio station at Camo X and here at 97.1 FM Talk, Charlie Dalton. And if I had him programmed into my phone as Charles Dalton and I had Charles Lipson in my phone and I'm trying to send you a message, it happens all the time where you hit something, you hit the wrong Charles. The problem with this is that it seems like Mr. Walls did not have Jeffrey Goldberg's contact. So doesn't that mystery sort of still remain?
Right. It may have come through through Walls's own assistant who had that name. And there is a question as to why they're using a private service signal, but the government is so bad at building its own stuff like this. I can see why they use it. I suspect that now that you've got Elon Musk in there, there will be people who can figure this out. I have a different take on all of this. It's obviously a bad thing that this happened, and I think it's a kind of niggling escape for the administration's spokespeople to say, well, there was no classified information. There was very sensitive information in this. It was a mistake. Yeah. They should just say so. But
let me just say this before you go on. The way that I usually approach these things is if the very same circumstance happened on the other side, would I be worked up about it? And I think the answer to that is yes. You know, now I don't know if I'd be calling for resignations and stuff, but you have to kind of look at it from that perspective. And I think it is an issue, certainly a serious problem.
Well, I completely agree. You should admit your mistakes.
Well, yes.
I'm not going to admit mine, but you should admit yours. Look, the real point here is it was a mistake. Nothing bad happened as a result. And it's the only thing the Democrats have. That's why they're pounding it. They have nothing. Look, Hillary Clinton stored enormous amounts of classified material, absolutely classified material, on a home server. It was never prosecuted in part because the people who would have prosecuted her were from her own party, but even more, and this was never really discussed, it included communications from Barack Obama, who knew he was communicating with a non-governmental web source, and he was communicating things that shouldn't have been communicated there. So that was the problem. But I think that it's not just he did it, they did it, we did it. It's also that that this is the only issue right now that Democrats have that works in their favor.
Well, that's true. I mean, look, there is nothing else that they can fall back on at this point. But then, here's where this gets a little difficult because some of it's pretty complicated. There's the issue of the leak or the issue of Goldberg being, you know, on the string. And then there's the actual string itself, which now has been revealed, and the New York Times has this, and the Atlantic has this, all the major, you know, legacy media outlets have the exchanges. I don't know if you've dug into that, but there's stuff that Pete Hegseth says and Michael Waltz and others that we probably didn't want out there, even if it's not classified. J.D. Vance as well. So there, I don't know if there's problematic things relating to diplomatic relations with NATO nations or not, but there were some things said in here that I'm certain they didn't want public.
I completely agree. It's not a good thing. It takes the administration off of their message. It's the only thing that's gone negative for them in a long time. And it's just a problem that they didn't need to have.
Well, and so where does this, you know, because there are people that are calling for resignations. There are people calling for Pete Hegseth to resign, for Tulsi Gabbard to resign. I mean, that's going to happen from the Democrats. President Trump has indicated that it was a mistake. He supports his team. They're going to move forward. But again, this becomes a big, big issue for the other side because they get to blast this out there nonstop. Not that it's not a serious issue, but to your point, this is going to be the dominant issue on the media for the next few days. They're going to try to stretch it out as much as they can.
So would you if you were
yes.
a Democrat.
Right.
It's all you got.
Right.
Look, it's BS asking for these people to resign. None of them are going to resign. And Trump made a big point of supporting all the key people. But they need to find out why it happened.
Yeah, no, they do need
and
to find out.
They need to find out whether the aide to Waltz in the White House was the guy who had the contact information, because I can tell you I don't have Jeffrey Goldberg contact information, and I'll bet you don't.
I do not, but I will say this. I go back to 2020 with The Atlantic because I started reading articles during the pandemic from a guy by the name of Derek Thompson, and I thought they were pretty smart articles, so I kept meeting the paywall, and I subscribed. And by the way, The Atlantic is not cheap. It's like $38 a month. I kept that subscription for a while, actually for a few years. I finally canceled it like 4 or 5 months ago because everything, and I mean like everything in The Atlantic outside of those pieces by Derek Thompson a few years ago is completely left-wing nonsense. I mean, they don't even try to hide it, of course. I was thinking at the time I could get some substance where there might be some middle ground, but that's not what you're going to get. And this Jeffrey Goldberg guy is kind of behind some of a lot of the nonsense. So I'm not trying to say, again, I don't think you are either, that this is not a serious issue that needs to be addressed. I think the White House realizes that. They're trying to deflect as well. We'll see how long it lasts. Let me ask you this question, though, Charles, because I've got another guest this hour, but I've got to get you on the record here. I'm in the opinion on this Jasmine Crockett, you know, Governor Hot Wheels thing. It's not that big of a deal. We don't need to censure a member of Congress for saying something like that. What do you think?
I don't care, really.
Thank you. Exactly, right?
Yeah. I think she is a piece of work, to put it in the gentlest possible terms. She's well educated. All of the way that she expresses herself now is acting.
Yeah, no, she's created a character. Look, she was well educated here at two very fancy private schools in St. Louis. Did you know that?
And then went to a private school in Memphis for her undergraduate degree. It's all BS.
Yeah.
But these people marginalize themselves. She can become a prominent backbencher, as I would say, in England. Like this, but she'll never become the senator from Texas. And the attacks on Musk and saying, you know, he's got to be hit hard and so forth, come very close to promoting violence.
Absolutely. Like, I was more concerned about some of that than the governor, you know, Hot Wheels thing, because I think that we give her far too much attention. Charles Lipson, enjoy the start of baseball season. We will talk soon. Thank you so much.
Me too. All right. Good to talk to you.
On that topic, Ricky Horton is coming up. The president was supposed to have this event on tariffs, still has not started. Oh, we have no Sue Thomas today. She'll be back tomorrow. Fred will be back from Japan as well. And of course, tomorrow is opening day. Ethan somehow is getting the day off because you're going to go and have fun at the game. I used to do that. I'm old enough to remember when I hosted all the opening day. Man, it was like, you know, you got to understand, when I worked on KMOX, I looked at these days when I would get off because of the Cardinals games, Ethan, and there was a lot of golf involved. I don't have that joy anymore. But let's talk a little baseball with Ricky Horton, broadcaster for the St. Louis Cardinals radio network. He works with the awesome John Rooney every day. Ricky, how are you this afternoon?
I'm doing great. I have the joy of talking to you, Mark. It's been a long time. And also, I've had the joy of getting to know and work with and be around Ethan a lot. And love that dude.
He is great, and he has spoke very, very fondly of you, and you've been a great mentor. So I appreciate that. But let's talk a little Cardinals baseball. I guess the question that everyone has is, can you give us hope, right? Can you give us a little hope, yeah. Ricky?
Yeah. Yeah, well, here's the best way I can say the hope. And, yeah, and well, first of all, baseball always provides hope. You know, 40 years ago, Mark, 40 years ago, the team I was on was picked to come in last place in 1985, and we got to within one game of winning the World Series. Now, I'm not saying that's going to happen, but, you know, I'm also not saying it's not. I mean, we had young guys in 1985 that all had to do something better than they'd ever done for it to work, and guess what? We all did. Pendleton did, Van Slyke did, Worrell did, Daly did, Coleman did. I mean, Willie McGee hit 363 and had never hit 300 before. I mean, this is a team that just kind of, you know, were out over their skis, and maybe that could happen. So that's part of the hope. But the other part of the hope, Mark, is that the division's not exactly filled with the Los Angeles Dodgers and the Bronx Bombers
that's
either.
True.
So
that is,
I mean,
true.
it's very possible that the team could win this division by being a couple of games over 500.
But these guys, especially the veterans, they're aware of where the expectations are. They're aware that the fans are, you know, a little lukewarm on what's happening, certainly in the front office. Not that St. Louis baseball fans aren't educated, don't want the young guys to come up and get experience, and that we understand that some of this is a rebuild. But there is an opportunity to exceed expectations. But these guys, they know what the expectations are, right?
Yeah, there's no doubt, and the young guys do too. They understand that it's about winning. It's not about just being in the big leagues, and a lot of the young guys have at least had a taste of the big leagues. And that old saying, you know, it's easy to get to the big leagues, but it's hard to stay there. And then the longer you stay there, the more you just want to win. I mean, you want to win anyway, but you know, getting to the big leagues is such a la-la land experience. I mean, it's like, man, I get to do what I dreamed of doing since I was 10 years old. But then the dream gets bigger, and that's what you hope happens with guys like Nolan Gorman and Brendan Donovan and Ivan Herrera and you know, of course, the Cardinals that are most reliant upon right now, they got to have the power from both Gorman and Walker, and those guys are very key.
So Victor Scott has this amazing spring. There's some questions lingering until the weekend whether or not he's going to make the roster. He is going to get the start in center field. What would you say about his spring, and how would you, you know, position Michael Ciani then relating to that?
Well, I think Michael Ciani becomes your fourth outfielder and your defensive replacement. Michael Ciani is, frankly, a better outfielder defensively than Victor Scott. And Victor Scott was a minor league Gold Glover, so that tells you something about how good Ciani is. So, but, you know, Michael doesn't hit the way Victor does, at least in spring training. Victor was different. I mean, he took all the suggestions that they gave him, Mark, and he took them to heart, and he just got better. He just did. And I could say the same thing about Matthew Liberatore, Luke and Baker. They all got rewarded for working hard in the winter and coming to spring training ready to go. And, you know, I do like that. But Victor's exciting. He can run, steal a lot of bases, and he has surprising power too.
Ricky, Ethan here. You know, with Victor Scott getting that starting center field position, it kind of puts Ollie Marmol in a little bit of a difficult position with how is he going to get all of these guys playing time? And I guess the main two that are expected to be affected their playing time is Nolan Gorman and Alec Burleson. How exactly do you navigate this if you're Ollie Marmol trying to, you know, balance out guys getting the runway they need, but also, you know, making sure that the better player's playing?
It's a great question, and I don't think it's answered yet. And I think Ollie has said, quite frankly, it's not ideal. So he's gonna work everything he can do to get all the guys at bats that need to get at bats. You know, I'm reminded of a time when one of my favorite Cardinals ever, Sotoguchi, was not a starter for the Cardinals, but led the team in at bats because he was kind of playing everywhere, and they just found places for him. You know, guys are gonna get hurt, guys are gonna be down for a while, guys are gonna, you know, need a break, and you know, you don't play every day, but you know how that is, Ethan. And so I'm just wondering if, you know, it's just going to be some magic of math that gives these opportunities to a guy like Burleson, because I think Alec Burleson, maybe Wilson Contreras, but I think Alec Burleson is the Cardinals' best hitter. That's my personal opinion. Donovan's right up there. Herrera's right up there. And I'm not talking about power now. I'm just talking about ability to hit. I'd hate to have Burley not in the lineup.
Well, where does Nolan Arenado fit into all this from the perspective, like, he is our third baseman. He is, we know how great he was. We were thrilled when he came here to St. Louis. But obviously, all this talk over the winter of trading, it's just got to be an awkward situation. Or has that kind of worn off, the awkwardness?
I think the awkwardness was less awkward in person than I expected it to be. And I, frankly, I expected it to be, you know, a little icy, but it wasn't. I mean, he was smiling, and John Mozeliak was talking about him a lot. And Mo is always very candid talking about things. And he said, look, that he's just being a pro about this, and we get along. We're doing fine. I mean, it just didn't
that's
work.
Good.
And that's, and he's got the prerogative. So, and you know, now, could that change? I mean, I don't think it's going to change. I think what might change is the, you know, I would say the better he does and the worse the Cardinals do, the more likely he's going to get dealt sometime during the year. I mean, that could happen.
So
too, if he's doing well.
No, absolutely. One final question. I only have 2 minutes left, but why, and I think I asked Tom Ackerman this question this earlier this week, why would we or why should we have any expectation that Sonny Gray will be better tomorrow and into the first part of the season than he was in the spring? Because he got roughed up pretty well.
He really did, and I think that's where the hope word comes in, because he's a pitcher. He's not just a thrower, and he does throw max effort like everybody does now, but he's got a really good idea of how to make adjustments, and that's my place where I go for the hope of Sonny Gray.
Ricky, before we wrap up real quick here, one final question. You know, obviously plenty of experience on the major league mound yourself. What did you like about this rotation from this past spring? You know, Michael McGreevy doesn't make the major league roster, but also moving to a six-man rotation for the first time after a lot of rumors about it, it feels like on and off the past couple of years, they're finally going to it. What was your biggest takeaways from the pitching this spring?
Well, not only McGreevy doesn't make it, Ethan, but Steven Matz doesn't get a shot at the rotation, and he was really good this spring. I think Steven Matz looked the best I've seen him since he's been a Cardinal. His delivery was different. Now, you know, can that come and go? Of course it can. But I thought he earned a spot in the rotation too. So that just shows how good the other guys were, other than, again, Sonny Gray being not so solid. Frankly, I do not like six-man rotations. I think it's a bad idea. But you know, I'm not in charge, and we'll see how that goes. I think I'd rather have a five-man rotation and two long guys in your pen, and maybe long-term that would be the kind of things they would do with a guy like McGreevy. I think if you have a six-man rotation, it will absolutely kill your bullpen.
In honor of the start of baseball season, about a week ago, over the course of two nights, I rewatched Bull Durham and got in the mood. And, you know, the good news is, no matter what the questions are, baseball starts again tomorrow, and we're all happy about that. So, Ricky, thanks so much for squeezing us in. Enjoy opening day. Yeah. I hope that we get the game in. Doesn't look like too much rain. We're off and running starting tomorrow. So I appreciate it.
Yeah, great to chat with you guys.
All right, thanks, you. That's Ricky Horton. And Ethan, I appreciate you setting that up for sure. We're going to be happy that there's baseball, and we're going to hope for exceeding expectations, which I do think is possible, mainly because they're so low. We got Ethan's news, pinch hitting for Sue, coming up.